The colony ship leaves Phoenix Station in 2 weeks, I said. Another week beyond that and we'll be landing in Roanoke. Even if what you say is true, there's not anything I can do about it now.
I must apologize again, Hickory said. I did not mean to suggest there was anything you could or should do. I would only wish for you to know, and to know at least some of the nature of our concern.
Is there more than that? I asked.
We have said what we can, Hickory said, except for this. We are at your service, Major. Yours, Lieutenant Sagan's, and especially and always Zoe's. Her father gave us the gift of ourselves. He asked a high price, which we willingly would have paid.
I shuddered slightly at this, remembering what the price had been.
He died before that price, that debt, could be repaid. We owe that debt now to his daughter, and the new debt accrued in her sharing her life with us. We owe it to her, and we owe it to her family.
Thank you, Hickory, I said. I know we are grateful that you and Dickory have served us so well.
Hickory's smile returned. I regret to say you misunderstand me again, Major. Certainly I and Dickory are at your service and always shall be. But when I say we are at your service, I mean the Oban.
The Oban, I said. As in all of you.
Yes, said Hickory. All of us. Until the last of us, if necessary.
Oh, I said. I'm sorry, Hickory. I'm not quite sure what to say to that.
Say that you'll remember it, Hickory said, when the time comes.
I will, I said.
We would ask you to keep this conversation in confidence, Hickory said, for now.
All right, I said.
Thank you, Major, Hickory said. It looked back at Dickory and then back at me. I fear we have made ourselves overly emotional. We will turn off our implants now, with your permission.
Please, I said.
The two Oban reached up to their necks to switch off their personalities. I watched as the animation slid from their faces, replaced with blank intelligence.
We rest now, Hickory said, and it and its partner left, leaving me in an empty room.
Chapter 3.
Here's one way to colonize. You take 200 or 300 people, allow them to pack what supplies they see fit, drop them off on the planet of their choice, say, see ya, and then come back a year later, after they've all died of malnutrition brought on by ignorance and lack of supplies, or have been wiped out by another species who wants the place for themselves, to pick up the bones. This isn't a very successful way to colonize. In our all-too-short ramp-up period, both Jane and I read enough reports on the demise of wildcat colonies that were designed in just this fashion to be convinced of this salient fact. On the other hand, you don't want to drop 100,000 people onto a new colony world either, complete with all the comforts of civilization. The colonial union has the means to do something like this if it wanted to, but it doesn't want to. No matter how close a planet's gravitational field, circumference, landmass, atmosphere, or life chemistry is to Earth's, or to any other planets humans have as yet colonized, it isn't Earth, and there's no practical way of knowing what sort of nasty surprise a planet has in store for humans there. Earth itself has a funny way of devising new diseases and ailments to kill off unwary humans, and there, we're a native species. We're foreign bodies when we land on new worlds, and we know what any life system does to a foreign body in its midst. It tries to kill it as quickly as possible. Here's an interesting bit of trivia I learned about failed colonies. Not counting wildcat colonies, the number one cause of abandoned human colonies is not territorial disputes with other species. It's native bugs killing off the settlers. Other intelligent species we can fight off. That's a battle we understand. Battling an entire ecosystem that's trying to kill you is an altogether trickier proposition. Landing 100,000 colonists on a planet just to watch them all die of a fast-moving native infection you can't cure in time is just a waste of perfectly good colonists. which is not to underestimate territorial disputes. A human colony is exponentially more likely to be attacked in the first 2 or 3 years of its lifespan than it is at any other point in time. The colony is focused on creating itself and is vulnerable to attack. The Colonial Defense Force's presence at a new colony, while not insignificant, is still a fraction of what it will be once a space station is built above the colony a decade or two later. And the simple fact that someone has colonized a planet makes it rather more attractive to everyone else, because those colonists have done all the hard work of colonization for you. Now all you have to do is scrape them off the planet and take it for your own. Landing 100,000 colonists on a planet just to have them scraped off it is also a waste of perfectly good colonists. And despite the Colonial Union essentially farming third world countries on Earth for colonists, if you start losing 100,000 colonists every time a new colony fails, eventually you run short of colonists. Fortunately, there is a happy medium between these two scenarios. It involves taking 2,500 or so colonists, landing them on a new world in the early spring, providing them sustainable and durable technology to address their immediate needs, and giving them the task of both becoming self-sufficient on the new world and of preparing the world, 2 or 3 years down the line, for roughly 10,000 more new colonists. Those second-wave colonists will have another 5 years or so to help prepare for 50,000 new colonists, and so on. There are 5 formal and initial waves of colonists, by which time the colony ideally has a population of 1 million or so, spread out over numerous small towns and 1 or 2 largish cities. After the 5th wave becomes established and the colony's infrastructure is established, everything switches to a rolling colonization process. When the population reaches 10 million or thereabouts, immigration stops. The colony gets limited self-rule within the CU federal system, and humanity has another bulwark against racial extinction at the hands of a callous universe. That is, if those initial 2,500 survive a hostile ecosystem, attacks from other races, humanity's own organizational shortcomings, and simple, ever-present damn bad luck. 2,500 colonists are numerous enough to start the process of making a world a human world. They are few enough that if they die, the CU can shed a tear and move on. And indeed, the tear-shedding part of that is strictly optional. It's an interesting thing to be both critical and expendable to humanity's effort to populate the stars. On the whole, I thought, I might have been smarter to stay on Huckleberry. All right, I give up, I said, pointing to the massive container that was being maneuvered into the cargo hold of the Ferdinand Magellan. Tell me what that is. Aldo Faro, the cargo foreman, checked the manifest on his PDA.
That contains all the mixins for your colony's sewage treatment plant, he said, and pointed at a row of containers. And those are your sewer pipes, septic tanks, and waste transports.
No outhouses for Roanoke, I said. We're going to poo in style.
It's not a matter of style, Faro said. You're going to a Class 6 planet complete with a non-compatible ecological system. You're going to need all the fertilizer you can get. That sewage treatment system will take all your biological waste, from crap to carcasses, and make sterile compost for your fields. It's probably the single most important thing you have on this manifest. Try not to break it.
I smiled.
You seem to know a lot about sewage, I said.
Yeah, right, Faro said.
More like I know about packing a new colony. I've been working in this cargo hold for 25 years, and we've been transporting new colonies all that time. Give me a manifest and I can tell you what sort of planet the colony's going to, what its seasons are, how heavy its gravity is, and whether that colony is going to make it through its first year. You want to know how I knew your colony had a non-compatible ecosystem? Besides, the sewage plant, I mean. That's standard on any colony.
Sure, I said. Faro tapped something on the PDA screen and handed the screen to me with a list of containers.
Okay, first off, Faro said. Food stores. Every colony ships with a 3-month supply of dry goods and basic foodstuffs for every member of the colony. And another month's supply of dry rations to allow the colony time to start hunting and producing its own food. but you have a 6-month supply of foodstuffs and 2 months of dry rations per colonist. That's the sort of loadout you see for a non-compatible ecosystem because you can't eat off the land right away. In fact, it's actually more than usual for an NCE. Usually there's a 4-month supply of dry goods and 6 weeks of rations.
Why would they give us more food than usual? I asked.
I actually knew the answer to this. I was supposed to be running the colony after all, but I wanted to see if Pharaoh was as good as he thought he was.
Pharaoh smiled.
Your clue is right in front of you, Mr. Perry. You're also shipping with a double load of soil conditioners and fertilizers. That tells me the soil there is no good, as is, for growing human food. That extra food buys you time if some idiot doesn't condition a field properly.
That's right, I said.
Yep, Pharaoh said. Final thing, you've got more than the usual loadout in your medical supplies for poison treatment, which is typical for NCEs. You've also got a hell of a lot of veterinary detoxifiers, too. Which reminds me, Pharaoh took back the PDA and pulled up a new list of containers. Double load of feed for your livestock.
You are a master of manifests, Pharaoh, I said. You ever think of colonizing?
Hell no, Pharaoh said. I've seen enough of these new colonies go out to know that some of them don't make it. I'm happy to load you up and load you out and then wave goodbye and come home to Phoenix to my wife and cat. No offense, Mr. Perry.
None taken, I said, and nodded to his manifest. So you said you can tell from a manifest whether a colony is going to make it.
How about us? Ah, you're loaded for bear, Pharaoh said. You're going to be fine, but some of your stuff is a little weird. There's stock on your manifest I haven't seen shipped before. You've got containers full of obsolete equipment.
Pharaoh handed back the manifest to me.
Look, you have everything you need for a blacksmith shop. In 1850. I didn't even think this stuff existed outside a period recreation fair.
I looked at the manifest.
Some of our colonists are Mennonites, I said. They prefer not to use modern technology if they can avoid it. They think it's a distraction. How many of your colonists are whatever it is you just said? Pharaoh asked.
About 200, 250, I said, handing back the PDA.
Huh, Pharaoh said. Well, then it seems you're pretty much prepared for everything up to and including time travel back to the Wild West. If the colony fails, you can't blame it on the inventory.
So it'll be all my fault, I said.
Yeah, probably, Pharaoh said.